Well, that was a fascinating discussion with Robert Morningstar, and more to come on Coast to Coast AM. E.T. Chronicles, What Myths and Legends Tell Us About Human Origins. Stand by. Dr. Rita Louise back on Coast to Coast in just a moment. Dr. Rita Louise, Ph.D., naturopathic physician, founder of the Institute of Applied Energetics, host of her own program. She grew up in a haunted house. That's always fun. Over the years, she's worked with countless clients who have been affected by attached entities as well. Her latest work, E.T. Chronicles. Louise, Dr. Rita Louise, welcome back.
Hey, George, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. What have you been doing in the last 2 years?
Going crazy.
What's happening?
Oh, well, there's a lot that's happened. I mean, you had met my husband, Wayne, who I wrote the book with.
Yep.
He passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
So that was challenging. And then I moved and bought a house that was built in 1910. And I have been learning how to mud walls and sand. And oh, my God.
You're doing it all. What happened to Wayne?
He ended up getting cancer.
Oh, gosh.
And so when I had announced that he was diagnosed with cancer, Wayne was well into the middle of the whole thing. And passed away a few weeks later.
Jeez.
Very, very fast. Yeah. Very, very fast.
That was fast.
Like Philip Coppens.
Yeah. I mean, so many of them. So many of them. Anyways, let's move on to some other things. And, our condolences. Yeah, absolutely. E.T. Chronicles. Tell me about this.
Well, what it does is it looks at myths and legends from around the world and puts it together in a storyline so that people can understand where we come from. There are a lot of people that talk about myths, but they talk about this myth here and this one here. And what this does is it organizes it into a cogent theory, not just using Sumerian myth, not just using Egyptian myths or Greek myths, but doing a survey around the world. And one of the things that we found was that cultures worldwide all basically tell the same story with their own spin to it. And it was really fascinating because you could take bits and pieces from all of these cultural stories and start plugging them in and kind of getting an alternate viewpoint, an alternate description of what these stories would tell you. So you got a deeper insight into what our history really is. It's still really confusing because we don't know who's really telling the truth, who's not telling the truth, how much material is real versus their cultural aspect on it.
But these ancient stories, Rita, they all seem, as you said, they all point in the same direction, don't they?
Yes, sir. Very much so. And the commonalities are unbelievable. There is a gentleman, Michael Witzel, Dr. Michael Witzel, who is a professor of Sanskrit studies and literature, and a bunch of things, and from Harvard University. And one of the things he talks about, which I didn't pick up in my research, was that when you start looking around the world, there's really two narrative groups that you find. One he calls Gowanland, and then another one called Lumerian. And it kind of separates around the equator, like South America, Australia, and areas down there have very much more simplistic narratives. You don't find as many of the stories down there, but you do find the stories, where in more of the northern latitudes, you get these elaborate stories of the gods with a lot of detail. It's just hard to believe that when we start looking at these stories that we are talking about something that one group made up and then spread around the world.
I was with Eric Von Daniken a few weeks ago. It's always a great time to be with Eric to talk about some of his thoughts and theories, what got him to write Chariots of the Gods. And you know, as you look at what you've done and what he has done and so many others, Rita, you know, it does pinpoint this incredible moment in time, in ancient time, where some incredible things happen on this planet. Why don't they appear to be happening that way now? Is it almost like the job is done? What has happened?
I think that they come and, all right, I have come to the conclusion that we have been visited in the past by extraterrestrials. You get into these stories deep enough, and there's no way to get around that point. There's just no way to ignore it. And one of the things, like in Sumerian, they talk about, or Sumeria, they talk about the Onas. And they would come on various times. And so, according to their mythology, the Onas had come and visited us 6 times. And it makes me wonder that they just come periodically, kind of update us with information, maybe update us with new genetic material, and then they take off. Because I think to them, it is a very short period of time, but for us, it might be thousands of years. And so I don't think that they're here all the time, or they're not interfacing with us on that level all of the time, but just in periods and points to give us an update.
Are you
So just
disappointed, Rita, though, that so many cultures point to these visitations, of which most of them think they were gods because they just didn't realize it at the time, but that all these godlike visitations were really ETs? I mean, what happened to the where is God, I guess?
well, many cultures, even ones in Africa, South Africa, have an understanding that there is the omnipotent God who is the creator of all things and underlies reality. And then they also believe that there are the gods that they talk about. And in the Western world, we're just, us intelligent people that have this understanding, are just coming to realize it. But if you look at Hindu culture, or you look at Native American culture, they already believe that the gods came from the sky, and their understanding of an extraterrestrial presence. It's really just in the Western world that it has just been eradicated from our thought process.
A lot of people believe that this intervention occurred 40,000 to 100,000 years ago. How far back do you think these episodes occurred?
Okay, so no hate mail or anything, people.
No
Listen.
hate mail. These are your opinions. You can't send hate mail because you have that opinion.
Okay. I think that they actually came here, well, to the Earth about 3.8 billion years
3.8
ago,
billion folks send her hate
billion
mail.
with a B, and actually helped to terraform the planet. So
Now,
I
that's an
think that
interesting
they're.
theory. I haven't heard that one before. 3.8 billion years ago, they basically
Correct.
jump-started a brand new planet.
Correct. There are so many stories about, there's the story of Marduk killing Tiamat, the Earth Mother, and her hair became the trees, and her blood became the water or the oceans, and her teeth became the mountains. And you find that kind of a narrative where a god is killed and their body parts become the terraforming of the Earth. And so I believe, and that isn't the only piece, but I believe that they came and, there are people that talk about the whole panspermia concept where the planet was impregnated with life,
Yes.
blue-green algae, my opinion. And I don't think that it was an accident. I think they came here and consciously started life on the planet.
And do you think that this seeding of this planet has been done and is still being done on other planetary systems?
It's very possible. That's a little outside my area of expertise, but I think it's possible. I don't think that we're all that special, that we are the only ones in the universe that this phenomena would be happening on.
So, who made them? Sounds like the movie Contact, doesn't it?
When my kids were young, one of my sons would ask these questions that were just too hard, and I would just look at him and go, God. It was God. I don't know. That's outside my purview. But, they talk about the universe being 3 point or 13 billion years old. I forget what the number is off the top of my head.
13 from about 13.5 billion.
Yeah, but the reality is that that's how far they can see out into space and detect out into space. We don't really know how big the universe is, and if it's only 13.5 billion years old, or that's how far we can see back into time, are we saying that the universe is a giant bubble? I don't think so. And so based on our knowledge, that's the date that we have, but it could be even older than that, but we just don't have the technology to detect it at this point in time.
So where's God?
Well, you know, if you go and study Kabbalistic belief, the belief is, or the understanding is that we are God. Everything is God, that we are just a ray off of this consciousness that is called God, and we are a manifestation of that energy. And so maybe God isn't the guy with the long white hair, you know, sitting on a cloud somewhere. Maybe it is this energy, this consciousness that we can all tap into anyway.
You're also working on a film called Icon.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about that.
So Icon, Deconstructing the Archetypes of the Ancients, looks at art and architecture from around the world and starts to evaluate, even though it doesn't have a lot of conclusions, but it raises a lot of questions, which I apparently like to do, about the subtle clues that we find in pieces of art or architectural structures so that we can start to look at what's going on, again, with this whole idea of this cultural phenomena, of this worldwide cultural phenomena happening. One of the things that there was a gentleman named Cain Carroll who talks about mudras. And so mudras are hand positions that come out of China. And so you might see a statue of Buddha, and he has his first finger, his index finger, and his thumb touching, and the other fingers out. And there is a significance to that hand position. Or they might have their hand up in the air doing the same position. And there's a significance to that. And in the Western world, we just look at it and go, yeah, his hand's up in the air. We don't even pay attention. But in their culture, there is a definite meaning to what that hand is doing. And it got me thinking, George. It got me thinking, okay, so if there is this very subtle message being portrayed, does that same idea apply in art as we go back in time? And so I started digging into that. And so, for example, the concept of iconography, I mean, it tells a story. And when we start looking at, and I'm going to use Christian religious art because I'm familiar with it, and St. Peter, if you go and you see a picture of St. Peter, now today we've kind of lost that library, which I think has been part of the problem. But if you go back 100 years ago and people saw a picture of St. Peter, they would immediately recognize him because he would have things. He would hold a set of keys or he would hold a sword. And just by those little details in the images, people could recognize him. Or Moses. Moses is often represented with those little horns on the top of his head, or he's holding the Ten Commandments. And when you see those pieces attached to a person, we automatically recognize who it is. And with that recognition comes the entire story that's with it. And so we look at things like petroglyphs, and we look at some very early art, and my belief is that there was an intrinsic story being told in those pieces that today we have lost the key. We have lost the library. And I'm thinking, even though I haven't researched this totally to get a whole lot of answers, is that we might be able to take things in cultures that we do know because of the iconography and start applying it to what we see in other pieces of art and see if we get a connection. Did that make sense?
I'm getting there.
You're getting there.
I'm getting there. How important is it between mythology and what you think is really happening? Is there a difference?
I'm not really understanding the question, George.
Between mythology and reality, where's the difference between any of these things that happen?
I mean, I believe that the mythology that we have today, there's a nugget of truth in it. There, you know, there might be a spin on the story, but, you know, people like to say that they're archetypes. You know, the gods are archetypes, or they're ways for us to address our higher self. But I feel like they weren't making it up. It's too intense. I live in Texas, and we had all those big storms with the flooding. I mean, we weren't flooded, thank God, that were happening. And, oh, my God, the thunder and the lightning that was happening during those storms was intense. And I was just waking up at 2 o'clock in the morning because it was so loud. I was putting myself in the shoes of our ancestors who, you know, were in their cave listening to sounds like that, thinking to myself, where would they get the notion that when they hear thunder, it is the gods in the sky fighting and battling? It is only in the last couple of hundred years that we have the technology to create bombs and create that kind of sound to recognize that there's battling going on. I mean, arrows and spears don't make that kind of noise. And so where would they get a very, very consistent notion that that is what the gods were doing unless they had experienced it at one point in
time?
Sure,
they were witnesses.
They were witnesses, exactly.
Now, let's bring Satan into this for just a moment.
Okay.
What did they witness to be able to talk about Satan?
Okay, I like talking about this.
Me too.
Okay, good. Okay, so let me get my stories right. And I'll use Greek mythology. In Greek mythology, we have the god Kronos, who, based on my comparative analysis of the different gods, was identified as a fertility god. If you move out of that context into other cultures, the fertility gods, from a description point of view, were associated with water. They were associated with the creation of mankind. They were associated with the education of mankind. Enki, for example, would be a fertility god. When you start looking at what the descriptions are of these fertility gods, they're often described as being half man, half snake, half man, half some kind of reptile. So that's the fertility gods. Then there's another group of gods, which are the sky gods, which Zeus would be a sky god. And when you look at representations of him, you know, he's got the white hair and the beard and the little flowing robe. And at one point in time, as we know from Greek mythology, there was a battle that happened between the sky gods and these fertility gods who lived in the earth, under the, you know, underground or under the water. And they lost. They lost this big battle. And I believe they were vilified because of this, because the sky gods wanted to run and control our thoughts and belief systems, and so now the fertility gods became bad and evil.
And very, very bad.
And over time became the devil. Yeah.
And what do you think Earthlings might have witnessed when they talk about Satan? Do you think as they saw extraterrestrials, they saw this too? They saw evil, they saw the devil?
I don't think so. I think there was kind of a brainwashing thing that happened. If you think about it...
Hold on for a second. Hold on, Rita. We're hitting the break already. We'll be back. And are you looking to watch a little television in a different kind of way? It's called Beyond Belief. And it is really beyond belief. Just go to the website, beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast with Dr. Rita Louise. Rita, you once wrote a book called Dark Angels.
Yes, sir.
Now, in the subtitle, of course, was An Insider's Guide to Ghost Spirits and Attached Entities. Dark angels, to me, sound like they're devils, Satan worshipers. Am I close?
Well, no. You're not close. Sorry, George. What it talks about, you know, I like to say it talks about the bad kids of the spirit world. And where it goes is there are angels. If, you know, if we have a spiritual spectrum, on one end we have angels and spirit guides. And then we have ghosts, which I kind of feel can be kind of neutral. There are good ghosts, nice ghosts. It might be Aunt Sally. And then there are some not quite nice ghosts. Then we have a concept called attached entities, which try to control and manipulate your space. And then you move into your demons and possessions and alien entities that try to control and manipulate your space. And so they're, to me, on the very low end of the spiritual spectrum.
What creates these dark angels? I mean, why are they so demonic?
My observation, I mean, I've done a lot of spirit release work with clients, is that, you know, if we're talking about, you know, more of the possession type, ghost type encounters, they want to come here and experience things on the physical plane of the earth. Their big thing is they want to control and manipulate what's going on. I mean, I had this one client who had this alien entity. I called him the devil guy. He kind of reminded me of the Flash from Fantastic Four. I mean, his body, he had a humanoid form, or that's what he presented, but it was all covered with fire kind of thing. You know, weird. Anyway, communicating with these, I call them alien entities, they don't speak human. They don't necessarily have emotions like we have emotions. And when I'm working with people, I can usually tie into their emotional energy. And these guys, not so much. And so communicating with them is a little bit challenging. But one of the things I kept gleaning from him was he wanted her to go. He wanted her to go. And it didn't make any sense. And we spent a couple of sessions working on it, and he kept saying he wanted her to go, until it hit me that he wanted her to go, like with him to his planet. And I looked at my client and I said, have you tried to commit suicide? And she said, multiple times. And it was this energy, this attached entity, this ghost, that was trying to get her to end her existence here on Earth so that she could go with him to his planet. It's a very interesting and weird concept, but there are so many people that have entity attachments, it's really remarkable. It's surprising.
How do we know these entities aren't truly bad extraterrestrials?
We don't.
So that's possible.
It's all lie. It is definitely possible. Even when we start talking about spirit guides, you know, they're non-corporeal beings. And so are they non-corporeal beings that are coming from Zeta Reticuli telling us that we want to live in peace and harmony? Years ago, and Barbara Hanclow wrote her book, The Palladian Agenda, which I love Barbara. And then Sheldon Neill wrote, We're Becoming Galactic Humans. And I read Barbara's book, had no problems, very uplifting, very fourth chakra, made you feel good book. And then I read the We're Becoming Galactic Humans book, and I couldn't even finish it, George. I was having nightmares. Now, I'm not a dreamer, per se, and I was having nightmares of these ships coming down and you know, the world stopped kind of thing. And one of the things that he talked about in the book was there'd be 3 days of no electronics, like electricity wouldn't work. And I was getting ready to go to an event, to go speak at an event, and the power went out. And I freaked out.
Who wouldn't?
Freaked out. because I'm thinking, oh my God, they're here. And then I realized that the radio was still playing, and so it wasn't a total blackout, and I had to put the book down because it was coming from such a place of fear and control. But what was interesting from an extraterrestrial point of view, Barbara wrote about the Palladians, and Michelle Denial wrote about the Syrians. And so is that part of the battle that's going on Earth, you know, between the Palladians and the Syrians, one coming from a place of peace and love and another group coming from an area of fear and manipulation?
See, I've always believed, Rita, that extraterrestrials, call them whatever you want, aren't as benevolent as so many people think. I think they have their own agenda, and I think this universe, which, you know, we're part of too, has a incredible evil side to it, and regardless of how high one might get technologically or in terms of advancement, I don't think they grow out of that greed and evil. I think it's inherent in whatever is in this universe.
I agree with you. I don't want to say that all aliens are evil, you know.
No, I'm not saying that either.
Yeah.
What I am saying is not all aliens are good.
And I agree with you. You start reading the mythology and the stories that we have of the gods, they're not very nice. You know, we think of God and God as being watching over us and is thinking about our best behavior when we pray to God to help us. But you read these stories and all they do is fight with each other and try to control and manipulate each other. And, you know, you have gods like Zeus having sex with the women on the earth, and you have Enki Enlil raping one of the other gods. I mean, you have these stories of scandal going on between the gods.
That's right. That doesn't sound like an advanced civilization to me, does it?
Doesn't sound very godlike to me in our understanding of God. Correct.
I want to get your, you know, you're not a scientist, but I want to get your take on the formation of this universe, because I still will not accept the fact that some minute little particle was compressed so much that it exploded into everything we have today in the universe. I just don't get it. Do you?
I kind of do, George. Now, whether that's the reality, the Big Bang Theory is the reality.
Well, let's see if you can explain it then.
Well, when you start looking at different things, there is the positive manifestation, and then there is the negative manifestation. And so it can come out. One of the things that I think is that the universe might have formed actually through a wormhole, you know, of energy and matter seeping through a wormhole, which would be kind of a negative existence from what we experience now. I think that wormholes, you know, dark and light universes, for lack of a better term, exist everywhere. One of the things that I talk about in one of my other books, which is Avoiding the Cosmic 2x4, which looks at health and healing, postulates that perhaps the chakras, the energy centers within the body, are actually little mini black holes and portals for redirecting and changing the formation of energy, just like we have where the chakras are actually the event horizons. So I think it's possible. I kind of like the Big Bang Theory.
Why?
I don't know.
Is it because it's an easy way to explain it?
Well, it's looking at it from like a waveform, you know. So if the median is what we would consider positive reality, you know, and we're on the top of the waveform now, it would make sense that we would move into the bottom of the waveform. And even in Hindu cosmology, they talk about the day and the night of Brahma, where the world is manifest when he is awake, but when he goes to sleep, it dissolves into nothingness. which again kind of supports this wave-like action, which is consistent with the nature of the universe, you know, the nature of things that we experience.
Researchers continue to argue whether extraterrestrials are angels. You don't believe they are. I don't believe they are. Well, why do they?
That they are.
That, yeah,
don't
well,
think that extraterrestrial.
They believe that ETs are really angelic. I don't believe that, nor do you.
No. Well, I mean, I think that our experience with angels, they could be extraterrestrial in nature. I mean, they're non-corporeal, so we don't really know.
I believe that there is an angelic realm. There's something very supernatural there.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I do feel like there are certain forces that are looking out for our best interest. Now, whether our best interest is self-serving to them, I don't really know. One of the things, one of my new projects that, you know, I have in the back of my mind that I've been doing research on but have not put pen to paper yet, is the whole notion of what is our reality? Why do we believe the things that we believe? Why do we believe that angels are good? And what is their motivation? What is sitting behind them wanting to help us? Because it could just be this whole, and I'm saying could, this whole plot to get us to be in this kumbaya, we love each other, we're moving up to a higher realm, but now we're also taking away our ability to fight back because we're just going along with what the voices in our head tell us to do. I mean, because that's kind of a whole part of the spiritual evolution, is to listen to your guides and follow the nature of the universe. And but isn't it making us be more complacent by not listening to ourselves?
What star systems do you think they may have come from?
We know from Dogon cosmology that they state that the extraterrestrials came from Sirius. One of the other star systems that you see over and over again are the Pleiades, over and over again. In Native American culture, they talk about Draco, the Big Dipper, North Star. And also in Egyptian cosmology, they talk about Orion quite a bit. And so I believe that those four star systems have all been part of the evolution on the planet. When you start looking at the descriptions of these different groups of gods, we're not talking about one group. It seems clear to me that we're talking about minimally four different groups, if not more, just based on their physical descriptions. You know, so four groups, four planets, works for me. Could there be more? I totally think there could be.
Well, with Dr. Rita Louise, her latest work, ET Chronicles, what myths and legends tell us about human origins? Tell us about those legends. What other legends are out there, Rita?
I mean, there are all kinds of things. You know, where we started was, I'm going to say, in the beginning, and ended with the advent of mankind. One of the criticisms that we got about the book was that I didn't talk about Atlantis in the book. And to me, I needed to have corroboration in putting a story into the book. And so if I couldn't find multiple cultures talking about the same thing, and when I say multiple cultures, I didn't mean Greek and Sumerian or Sumerian and Egyptian. I was talking more about if I found it in Sumerian tradition and I found it in Native American cosmology, I considered it a good one. Or if I found it in Australia, because I feel like Australia is the main one. If you can find stories in Australian cosmology that parallel other storylines, then you know that it is an ancient, ancient narrative. And so the only story that we really have of Atlantis or even Mu are the few stories that have come forward, but I couldn't find corroboration. for those storylines, and so they didn't get included. So, but there are all kinds of stories that go into the development and creation of humanity. There are stories about a race of giants that lived on the earth. There's stories about humanity learning stuff. You know, I think your listeners are educated enough that they know that there are stories about how the gods taught us agriculture, how the gods taught us to use metal, how the gods taught us all of these things. It makes me go, I don't think humanity is really all that smart, because according to myth, we didn't invent anything. I mean, unless you watch, you know, the History of Mankind on Discovery Channel or History Channel, which says we invented everything, which is not what the storyline says. And so there's a lot, it covers a lot of stuff, George. I don't know. Pick a topic.
There are many. So what do you think of Zachariah Sitchin's theories of the Anunnaki coming here from an extra planet in the solar system?
There are parts that I agree with. There are some parts that I have some issues with. My biggest issue with his work, or where my issue started, because I thought his material at first was wonderful. But then after starting to do this research, I uncovered some material that led me to say, maybe not so much. In particular, the gold, George. And everybody runs around and go, oh, well, they came here for the gold. And I do believe that the Anunnaki was, you know, a race of these extraterrestrials that came here. And I think they were the sky gods. But I couldn't find the gold. I could not find evidence of them wanting to get the gold to use it to seed their universe. Now, I found some other potential uses for the gold that seem congruent with what we see archaeologically on the planet, what we see culturally on the planet, but not evidence for his description of they came here for the goal to fix their universe. I think there's a little mistake there. Hmm.
But you do think they came here?
Oh, yes, very much so. I mean, the Sumerians called them the Anunnaki, and other cultures, I think, just have different names for them because it's the same people. You find the same characters all around the world, and they just have different names for the same guys.
Well, Dr. Rita Louise, and Rita, you've got several websites. We've linked them up. Is there a specific one you want to give out?
Sure. It would be soulhealer.com, SOULHEALER.com, soulhealer.com.
What was it like growing up in a haunted house?
Well, it was kind of interesting. There was a dead guy that lived in the basement, and I knew the dead guy lived in the basement, you know, most of the time that we lived there, and so no one ever liked going in the basement. And my parents had an extra refrigerator down there, and you'd have to go down there to get, you know, a head of lettuce or a bottle of soda or something that was down there. And our reaction to going down there was all the same. George, we would open the door, and if it was dark, you'd stick your arm in the door and flick the light switch on, and then you'd run down the stairs, turn the corner, run down the other flight of stairs. There was a pull light. You'd pull that light on, run around the corner, open the refrigerator door, grab whatever you needed to do, and then do the reverse, running back up the stairs and then slamming the door. It wasn't until I wrote the Dark Angels book, that I had conversations with some of my brothers and sisters, and they said, well, yeah, we all knew about the dead guy. And I'm like, okay. But then I found out that my sister saw a UFO. I'm like, get out of town.
They're all tuned in. We're going to come back, Rita, and take some phone calls with you next.